has to work for those blessings. And although it's a very different world before Adam and Eve sinned, what's one of the first things that God told Adam to do? He told him to work. So God made us to be people that work. Now look in chapter 13 and verse 4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. You may have goals in your life, desires for your family, but you can't ever reach those without self-discipline, without diligent, steady, consistent work. Very few people in the world get rich quick. And as we're going to talk about in a little bit, most of it falls apart, those that do. The ones that really get to enjoy things are the ones who diligently work and they take care of the things that they have and they appreciate the things that they've earned. Chapter 6, along this line of self-discipline, he gives us a good example. He says, look at the ant. Proverbs 6 and verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. If you've ever stopped, maybe you've just been sitting on the ground for whatever reason, and all of a sudden you notice there's maybe an anthill over here. And you watch, and you see how they work. Just in a line, they'll find whatever it is they can, and say they find a piece of food on the ground. Well, it's like they just call out the troops, and they all come in a line, and they're picking up a piece by piece. And some of those ants amaze me at how big of pieces of things that they can carry on their backs. And they march their way, and they take it there, and they have a storehouse for these things. And guess what? Because they worked diligently for those things, they get to enjoy their labor. God says, look at the ant. If you want to know why you're not able to enjoy things, maybe you need to be more like the ant. Maybe I need to be more like the ant and see how he just works day to day consistently and he has what he needs. Continue on in verse 9. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. I don't know, but I imagine I'm not the only person that does a little bit of work, and then I get through, I check one thing off of my list, and I think, well, I just checked something off my list, so now let me sit back, take a little time to relax, and all of a sudden, the hours go by, and I have just relaxed twice as long as I did to check that one thing off the list, and I don't get as much done as I had planned to do that day. But that's really how we think. Just a little sleep, little slumber, little rest. Let me just have some relaxed time. But then we blow it all out of proportion. And the one thing that I do notice also about my life is that when I jump up, when I get started on the day and I get to work and I start checking those things off and I don't think that I've got to have relaxed time after every time I check something off the list, I get a lot of things done and I end up having more time to relax at the end of the day. It's amazing how diligent work can actually provide more blessings than taking the chance to relax every chance we get. Well, look at chapter 10 now. Chapter 10, verses 4 and 5. Part of being self-disciplined, part of diligent work, is not wasting the opportunities that are before us. A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. And it kind of goes along with the last point that we made, is, you know, I'll get to that later mentality. And so, you know, the farmer comes and it's the beginning of the summer, and well, you know, I should probably go out and cultivate a little bit, but I probably got another week. I can wait a little bit. And, you know, it just puts it off, and all of a sudden the field's overgrown, the crops are starting to be destroyed, and the harvest is gone, and it's past. And so part of our problem sometimes is we just don't make use of the opportunity, of the time that we have. And so if it's time to work, it's time to work. And so we need to get to work. We need to use that time and not waste it. Well, look at chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 11. Chapter 12 and verse 11. Whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. I think it's the... What other translation was I looking at? I think it was the New International Version that translated this verse. Instead of empty pursuits, it said fantasies. And maybe another one said dreams. You know, the Bible doesn't have a problem. God doesn't have a problem with us having dreams, with us pursuing things that we think will make us happy, will make us successful. In fact, Ecclesiastes says it outright in chapter 11, I think about verse 9. It says, go after the desires of your heart. Now it says, keep in mind, God will bring us into judgment, so we need to make sure that they're right with God. But God says, go after the desires of your heart. That's okay. But I like the point that this verse brings out. Whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. And so I get the picture of someone, you know, they've got this plan. They've got this dream, you know, this is gonna do it. This is gonna make money. And so they pursue this pursuit, and it doesn't work out. But instead of going and then getting to work and making some money, another bright idea comes along, and this one's gonna work. This is the one that's gonna make me the money. I'm gonna be successful. And that one doesn't work, and they're not making any money as they pursue these things. And so I think chapter 12 and verse 11 paints the picture. You can have dreams, but work to get there. Work as you go along. And it may be that the things that you, the finances that you accrue while you work will enable you to reach your dreams in the future. Look at chapter 14 and verse 23. In all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. It's kind of the same idea, talking about, I've got this good idea, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that, and we never get to actually doing it. We're just talking about the things that we're going to do at some point, and all of a sudden, time is gone, and we haven't done anything, and we get into trouble. Work to reach your dreams. I want you to look at chapter 16 and verse 24. And parents especially, pay attention to this, because this is an important lesson that we need to learn, but we need to be teaching our kids. Chapter 16... in verse 24. That is not the verse that I wanted. 26. A worker's appetite works for him. His mouth urges him on. Whoever said that, Thank you. But I want you to think about what he says there. A worker's appetite works for him. His mouth urges him on. He knows that if a man doesn't work, he doesn't eat. And there may be someone that'll help you to an extent, but even sometimes the people that would help you to your own detriment, eventually they run out of being able to help you too. And so the point is, we need to learn to work. We need to learn that to have the things that we need, we've got to be able to work. Our appetite should drive us on. If you want to be able to eat, you need to be able to work. Now look at chapter 19 and verse 24. Because if we don't understand that, if we start thinking everybody will just give us a handout, and this is what I said about parents, start teaching your kids to learn about work in your house. How that they can learn about earning things and being able to provide some things for themselves. Because if we don't teach them that, they'll end up like chapter 19 and verse 24. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. And sometimes the proverb writer, he'll go to this kind of extreme, almost humorous extreme. And so you get the picture. I mean, I kind of get a picture of just a big guy. He's sitting at the table, and he's ready to eat. And he digs his hand in there, and he's so lazy he can't even bring it back up to his mouth. Some people are kind of like that. They just want everybody to spoon feed them everything. I want money. I want you to give me, I saw a news article not long ago that, I can't remember it all. But basically, this woman was just so angry and so upset at the government because she had, I think, like 10 kids, and the government wasn't just giving her an apartment and giving her food. She said she deserved it, to be just given it to her. And that's sad that people come to that point and they think, well, I should just get a handout from everyone. God says, as His people, we should be people of work. And we should be disciplined people, diligent workers that can provide for ourselves. We need to be self-disciplined people. Well, let's talk about the relationship between planning and work. Look at chapter 20 and verse 4. Chapter 20 and verse 4. The sluggard does not plow in the autumn. He will seek at harvest and have nothing. And just the idea, we have to think ahead. We have to plan for the future. And there are so many people that don't think anything about it. And it would be a misuse of passages like James chapter 4 that talks about, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go into the city and I'm going to buy this and I'm going to do that. And so someone might look at that passage and say, well, see there? We're not supposed to think about the future. Or Jesus said, you know, only worry about the things of today. Tomorrow has enough for us to worry about. Jesus isn't saying don't make plans for the future. And James is saying the same thing. We can't control everything about the future. But God tells us over and over again, we've got to be people that plan for the future. And so from a financial standpoint, we have to save. And things like that. But also from a work standpoint, we need to be thinking about our future. Where is our work going? What do we need to be doing so that our work will be successful and beneficial for us in the future? What about chapter 24, verses 30 to 34? Chapter 24 and verse 30. I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense, and behold, it was all overgrown with thorns. The ground was covered with nettles and its stone wall was broken down. Then I saw and considered it. I looked and received instruction, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. So it's the same imagery that we saw in the passage before, that we have to work. You know, to have a harvest, you have to work now. You've got to plant, you've got to cultivate, you've got to take care of it until it's time for the harvest. It doesn't just appear. And whether it's farming or something else, many jobs are like that. If you're in the restaurant business, before you start making money, before you have a successful restaurant, you've got to think about customers. You've got to look in the area, figure out what kind of food places are in the area. You've got to do some planning. You've got to do some work to be able to have work and to be able to have a successful future. Chapter 27 and verse 18. Whoever tends a fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who guards his master will be honored. Again, you've got to take care of something. You've got to plan if you want to be able to eat the fruits of your labor in the future. Look at chapter 24 and verse 27. Chapter 24 and verse 27. Prepare your work outside. Get everything ready for yourself in the field, and after that, build your house. Well, you know, I think things were a little bit different in their culture and their time period. But I think we can relate to the statement. There's a lot of people that they want to have the things of success without the work. Whether it's a really nice house or nice clothes, you know, whatever it is, have a retirement saved up. They want to have this idea of, I'm really successful before I've ever done anything. It amazes me, if you ever listen to Dave Ramsey, it blows my mind that people, doctors for instance, still spend thousands of dollars in medical school. And before they're even out of medical school, they want to act like they've had a successful practice for about 20 years, and they go and they buy themselves a million-dollar house. Well, I'm a doctor. That's what I've got to have. I'm a doctor. I've got to have a BMW. Well, you know, the verse is saying you've got some things to do. Get your work done outside and then build your house. Take care of what you need to do first, and then what comes later will come. Part of doing that goes along with our next verse is education. We need to think about the type of work that we want, and we need to pursue that. Look at verse 27 and verse 23. Know well the condition of your flocks, and give attention to your herds, for riches do not last forever, and does a crown endure to all generations? When the grass is gone and the new growth appears and the vegetation of the mountains is gathered, the lambs will provide for your clothing and the goats the price of a field. There will be enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household, and maintenance for your girls. You know, there's probably a couple different applications of this passage, but one of the first things I thought about is this guy chose to be a shepherd. He chose to have sheep. And one thing he knew when he chose this kind of work is that he would have things to make clothes out of. He would have milk to drink and all the things that he could have that go along with this. And it made me think about people that choose careers and they don't really put much thought into it. They kind of open up the college book and they think, well, what kind of degree programs do they offer? Wow, They have a whole degree dedicated to making pistachio ice cream. I think I'm going to spend 4 years getting a degree learning how to make ice cream. You know, that's an extreme example. But there are other things. Some things come under the heading of cultural studies. And people learn about basket weaving. And they get a college degree in basket weaving. And there may be some field somewhere where that's going to supply for your family. That's going to make some money. But we really need to give some thought into the career field that we choose. And if it's going to be able to provide for us in the future. And one thing this shepherd knew is that taking care of his sheep, being a shepherd, it was going to provide some things for his family in the future. And then in chapter 22 and verse 29, chapter 22 and verse 29, "Do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men." If it was time to replace the roof on your house, you might just open up the phone book and look up roof and grab the first one that you see. But I imagine most of us, with something that's as expensive as a roof can be, we're probably going to ask our friends and we're going to say, "Hey, can you recommend a good roofer? Have you had any experience with a good roofer?" And they'll, you know, "This person, well, I heard they did a shabby job. You know, first storm came through, everything blew off. This person, oh, their roof was solid and it lasted through a tornado." You know, so the point is, who do you want? You want a person that's skilled in their work. And the verse says, "Do you see a man that's skillful in his work? He's going to be the one that the king calls upon. He's the one that's going to have the work. He's the one that everybody's going to be talking about around town. If that's the kind of work you need, that's the guy you need to call, or that's the girl that you need to call, because she's skillful in her work." Education is an important thing. Not every job requires a college education. You know, one thing that we're coming to realize is there are many jobs in our society now. Welding is one thing now that is not taught in a lot of places, and we're having a shortage of those things. And so not everything requires a college education, but most things require putting in some time and effort to learn the work. And so part of being a diligent worker is being willing to put in the time to take the necessary steps to learn the work that you're going to do. And it goes for just about every field that you can think about. There's a difference between the person that's preaching his lesson for the first time and the preacher that's been preaching for 25 years. There's a difference between me and the preacher that's been preaching for 25 years. They've put the time, the effort, they've developed their skill. But there's also the difference between two guys that have been preaching for 25 years. One guy has been preaching the same old sermons for 25 years, and the other guy has been reading his Bible daily, and he's getting to know the people, and he's trying to make his material relevant and fresh, doing the best he can in his work for the Lord. So whatever field you choose, you need to think about if you're skillful in that field. Are you pursuing so you can be the best that you can be in that field? We have to do some planning to be able to be good workers. Well, the last kind of section that I want to talk about is the importance of being honest and having integrity in our work. Look at chapter 13, Proverbs 13 and verse 11. Proverbs 13 and verse 11. "Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it." You may have a note down there at the bottom that hastily could also be translated by fraud. And sometimes we like to take shortcuts in our work. And sometimes it's not always honest shortcuts. And we need to, again, it's diligent work. The people that often take the shortcut are often the people that lose their wealth. They gained it, and they made it really fast, but then their dishonesty, their lack of integrity caught up with them later. And many people, oftentimes the people that you hear that commit suicide, it's the people that recognize they have lived a life of dishonesty. There was an elder in a church who was a wealthy businessman. And if I understand what happened correctly, he eventually committed suicide. And it came out that he owned a chain of businesses and he had committed tax fraud and maybe some other things. It got him some money very quickly, but it caught up with him eventually. People were starting to find out. And he thought that that was enough to end his life. To be a worker that the Lord wants is a worker that's honest and works hard over time. Chapter 11 and verse 1. Chapter 11 and verse 1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. Chapter 16. Chapter 16 and verse 11. A just balance and scales are the Lord's. All the weights in the bag are His work. Well, the idea is people come to the marketplace and maybe what the person did is he took a little weight and he somehow attached it to the bottom of the scale so that when he put it in there, that meat or whatever it was weighed a little bit more than it actually did. Got him a few extra shekels. And we do that sometimes in work. We find little ways to make a little extra. And it's not always the honest way to go about it. We're running in numbers and, well, we'll just, you know, round it off a little bit. No big deal. And maybe that's not what we're supposed to be doing. One of the ways that we might tip the scales is we might do it to someone. And the other passages, it mentions the same thing. This is important to the Lord. A lot of times we want to separate our work. Don't talk to me about how I'm supposed to be doing my work. Don't you tell me that this isn't the right way. That's church and this is work. The Lord says no. A just balance and scales are the Lord's. This is what the Lord wants for His people. And one of the ways that we might tip the scales is we look at the person that we're dealing with. Look at chapter 23 and verse 10. Do not move an ancient landmark or enter the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is strong. He will plead their cause against you. Well, the fields of the fatherless, people that are helpless, you know, don't take advantage of someone because you recognize that you can. And sometimes people in business will look and they'll say, you know, it may be one price for one person that maybe has knowledge about what you're talking about. But maybe another person comes in and they don't really know very much about this product. Well, I might can add about, you know, few dollars to this product because they have no idea what it's worth and make a little bit more. And so one thing we need to think about in our work is God does not want us to take advantage of people. We need to be honest and consistent in the way that we deal with people. In chapter 15 and verse 27... And there are other passages where God looks down on accepting bribes. Whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. You're so greedy to make some money here and there that you're willing to do it unjustly. You're willing to take a bribe. Yeah, sure, I'll do that if that's what it gets me. Just name the price. and I'll be willing to do just about anything. Some people are like that. And I've even seen Christians that are like that at times. And God says we ought not to be that way. Again, we ought not to take advantage of people. We ought to treat people with honesty. Chapter 20 and verse 17. What happens when we're dishonest? Again, it catches up to us in many different ways. And one of the ways that being dishonest will catch up to us is when people realize it, we won't have any good people on our side. Chapter 20 and verse 17. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be full of gravel. It's sweet at the beginning, but then our words, our deceit, comes back to haunt us, comes back to hurt us when people realize how we've been treating them. In chapter 10 and verse 2, another passage along these same lines. Treasures gained by wickedness do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. Probably, I would imagine most of you have seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life. And, you know, Harry's got the bank there and the savings and loan. And times get tough. And, you know, he gets in a bind. And what he finds out in the end is because he's always been kind to people. He's always dealt with people honestly. He's always had integrity in every bit of his work. The people have noticed it. The people consider him his friend. And they come knocking on his door in his time of need and they deliver him from the troubles that he's in. When we're dishonest, when we treat people wrongly, it comes back to haunt us, it comes back to hurt us, and part of the way it may come back to hurt us is that we're all alone when we're in need. Who wants to help someone that has taken advantage of them? But when we treat people rightly, we may not make as much as the next guy who's taken advantage of people, but we'll have people on our side, good people who recognize that we're hard workers, who just treat them right. There's a lot of wisdom about everyday life in the book of Proverbs that is contradictory to the way the world tells us we ought to live. I want to close with a passage from the New Testament, Colossians 3, verses 22 through 24. Colossians 3, verses 22 through 24. Slaves, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. And I think that sums up the attitude of the book of Proverbs. Work hard, plan, take care of your family, be diligent, be honest, have integrity, and the Lord will be with you. And the Lord will be pleased with you. But we can't separate that and say, well, you know, this is spiritual life and this is physical life. That's not how the Bible treats it. Like we said this morning, God owns us. He owns our life, and He deserves to dictate how we live in every facet of our lives. And what we come to find out is the instructions of God are wisdom, and we'll be blessed by listening to our Creator. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we want to invite you to become one. The Son of God came to this earth. He died to save us from our sins. And if you're willing to repent of your sins, confess your faith into Him, and be baptized into Him, you can be forgiven of your sins and have a relationship with God. Maybe you're a Christian. Maybe even some of the things tonight you've recognized you haven't been faithful in the way that you work, or maybe some other area. And you want to be faithful to the Lord in every area of your life. We're here to pray for you, to encourage you. If we can help you in any way, please come as we sing the song that's been selected.